This episode of Two Fat Expats is brought to you by the fantastic new expat mag, Fat Expats. Now, if you want to find out how to sign up for Fat Expats or how to read it or get it, head over to twofatexpats.com and you'll see a little pop-up come up for you to sign up. You can also head over to my website, which is kirstyriceonline.com, and you can sign up there as well. Either way. Okay, we're starting the show a little bit differently today. One of our fatties, or the fatterati, as we now seem to like to say, is Erica, who's in China. She's in Beijing. And Erica wrote a little update for her family and friends, and I asked her if she'd mind sharing it with us, because I think it gives you a real insight into what it's like to be in China right now and how they're feeling and what their day-to-day looks like. So let's start with Erica, and then we'll get on with the show. See you soon.
We just wanted to say thank you to everyone who has reached out to us with their concerns about us being here in China with the rapidly spreading coronavirus, which has now been declared a global health emergency. It's quite an interesting time to be here in China, but we are constantly amazed at the resiliency of the Chinese people and their determination to stop this virus. We are happy and healthy here in Beijing, and we feel that our risk of catching this virus is extremely low. There are only 121 cases in our city of 22 million. We have the supplies we need to not leave our apartment, but if we do need to go out, we do take the necessary precautions by wearing masks and carrying hand sanitizer. When the weather and the AQI are nice, we've been enjoying the empty streets with some walks and bike rides. And the Chinese are doing an incredible job of stopping the spread of this virus. All school, work, church, and other large gatherings are cancelled. Many small villages in the area have self-quarantined, and anyone that is returning to Beijing from their travels must self-quarantine for 14 days. Almost all flights in and out of Beijing have now been cancelled, and school has been delayed until further notice, with the teachers now delivering online lessons. We still go out to buy groceries, of which we have seen no shortage, but we have stocked up on all the necessary things that we think we'll need so we can avoid going to the shops. The few people that we do see out and about are all wearing masks in an effort to protect themselves and others. We have been stopped a few times for temperature checks when entering buildings like hospitals, chemists, and our school campus where we live. Overall, I am in awe that this coronavirus is not crushing the collaborative spirit that is China. I know many foreigners that are choosing to evacuate from China, and many have asked us if we plan to leave. We did consider flying to Australia, but we decided that the 14-hour flight and the 18-plus hour layover in other Chinese cities or the 12-hour stopover in Bali was more of a risk to us than staying safely inside our home. I did receive an email from DFAT, Australia's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade, who told us about the option of boarding an Australian evacuation plane from Wuhan to Perth. That involved a mandatory 2-week quarantine on Christmas Island. Even if we wanted to board that plane, it would be impossible for us to get into the lockdown city of Wuhan, where the plane was departing. In order for us to do that, we would have had to put our family at risk by travelling to the epicentre of the virus. China is our home and we feel safe here. So for the meantime, we're enjoying some time at home. My husband and I are both completing assignments for our studies, so that's been a big focus. We're also able to catch up on things that we don't usually have time for, like painting Elsa castles, dressing up for Elsa balls, Elsa tea parties, makeup parties, princess parties, cooking, playing all the board games that Santa left for us, and watching some movies. We're enjoying the extra family time that we wouldn't have had otherwise. We're also planning to use this time to pack and sort through our apartment before we move in March. It's been a very therapeutic time to clean, organize, and declutter our apartment. Marie Kondo would be very proud. Yes, it's a bit boring, and yes, it's a bit inconvenient, and yes, we are a little bit worried about what is happening outside, but we are healthy and everyone we know is healthy. China is a really amazing place. When you hear rumours about China or quick to judge an entire population of people based on what you hear in a news story, please know that there is always another side to the story. Know that we are here on the ground and we are amazed by what we are seeing in this time of crisis.
Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you? We've come through the night unscathed. We had big storms in Europe last night that are called other things in other countries, but when they come to Germany, they're called Sabine. Somehow the EU doesn't have its storm naming process altogether, so they can be called.
So are you telling me that if, well, we call them cyclones and the Americans call them hurricanes, don't they? Like we had cyclone.
Yes.
Tracy. So if Cyclone Tracy made her way to Germany, would that mean she would be Cyclone Tilda or
Tina, something like that? I'm not really sure, but no, I don't even know that because in the rest of Europe, she was Storm Chiara. So it's it's not even the same letter of the alphabet. Apparently, I saw last night in some Facebook groups that Germany has a totally different naming convention for storms. So don't let anyone tell you the EU makes every country do the same thing because it just doesn't. Just doesn't.
Now, I thought your storm reference may have been about the girls that you were billeting for basketball over the weekend. I believe you've had international guests.
We did over the weekend. We had two international guests from the International School of Amsterdam. We had a lovely girl who was originally from India and another student who was from Hong Kong.
Nice.
And both have lived in the Netherlands for differing amounts of time, actually. And, of course, it's very exciting when we have someone from Hong Kong because, one, we live there and, two, Willow was born there, so she likes to talk about that. And even though we left when she was so small and she doesn't really remember much, but it was all speaking about, well, Hong Kong and our topic of the day, coronavirus. I also had an interesting conversation with our student that we had here, and she was talking about how she has cousins in Hong Kong who have packed up and moved to the Netherlands till the end of summer because of the school closures. And so they moved over to put their kids in school here for the end of the school year, and then they come every year for the summer apparently. So they just came early.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, it might sound drastic measures to some, but I think I'd be the same. If I was in Hong Kong and school was closed till March, our school breaks up end of May, beginning of June. And so if I was thinking, what if this goes over for another month, am I better off? You know, I guess you're saving the airfares and you can just get cracking straight away, right? If you're not too sure how long this is going to last. And you know, with the coronavirus, we all have differing opinions, right, of what we think may or may not happen. Some of us think, you know, yes, we'll be back in school in March, and some of us think, God, no, this could take a lot longer than that. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense. I would do the same, I reckon, because I'd be thinking, well, we're home in June, we've got to March. If it pushes out to April, why not just stay put, you know, until it's time to go back to school in September?
Yeah, I saw this week that a lot of the Hong Kong families have started their homeschooling programs, and not everyone's super keen about how that's working out for them.
No, I have a sister-in-law who's going through that as well. So my sister-in-law, my brother-in-law and his wife live in Hong Kong, and she's currently in Maroochydore with my mother-in-law. And yes, week. Actually, I don't even think she's a week in. I think she's maybe 2 days in and reaching for the gin.
Yes. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine it. I just, everything that everyone's going through and then adding homeschooling as well. It's a bit of a bridge too far.
Okay, Nikki, coronavirus. It has been an interesting one for us in that you and I started to think about the podcast last week, I guess when things really sort of started to blow up. And, you know, one could say yes, Nikki's putting her mask on as we speak. But I did dutifully go off and interview a couple of people, and within 24 hours, those people that I interviewed, their situations had changed dramatically. So we initially spoke to Susan last, I'm thinking it was like last Thursday, and
Susan was telling us all about how her daughter was in Canada and that she was still coming back to them, that, you know, while they were kind of holed up in their apartment, that they were allowed to go out every couple of days for a few hours to go shopping. But she was definitely bringing her daughter back because her daughter wanted to be with her, and that's the way things were going to roll. And then I reckon it was about 6 hours after the interview, I got a message from Susan saying, actually, no, that's all changed now. So shall we have a listen to Susan and I guess the original bit of the first interview and then what happened next?
So I'm in Ningbo, which is on the East Coast, below Hangzhou, below Shanghai, and we're about 550 kilometers, I believe, from Wuhan.
Right.
Is the epicenter.
Have you ever been to Wuhan? Did you know that Wuhan existed before today?
Yes, I did. I'm a longtime resident of China, so I visited there a very long time ago, about 20 years ago, because it's on the Yangtze River and it's part of the Yangtze River cruise. I think the first stop.
And so what has kept you in China for all this time?
Well, I've left and come back again many times. My husband is a professor with a British university, the University of Nottingham.
Got it.
And they have a campus here.
Right. And so home for you normally is where?
We're from Ontario, Canada originally.
Okay, so tell me about when did you first hear about the coronavirus and that it was in Wuhan, and what was your sort of first knowledge of it?
Sure. It wasn't long after my daughter had left for her very first solo trip back to Canada to take a look at universities, and people started talking about it and seemed to be changing their family get-togethers, changing their plans to travel. So I was wondering what was up.
And do you mean people within the expat community or people, local friends as well?
Actually, a Chinese friend. And he said to me on Chinese New Year, which was, I think, the 24th, 25th, that he was going to drop by my place because his family also lives in my community. And then he said, oh, sorry, we've canceled our family get together. And I said, oh, why? Is it that serious? And he said, well, the government is asking us to keep things simple this year and not to gather. So that's when I started to realize that it was getting serious.
Is your daughter still out of the country now? Is she still back in Canada?
Yeah, she is. She's due to fly back on Friday from Canada and arrive here on Saturday. So far, we're still sticking to that plan as she needs to be here for distance learning with her school. They're not starting up school right away, Yes. But her computer is here, her textbooks are here, and she just wants to be home with mum and dad. She's 17 and trying to finish grade 12.
So is she doing the IB or is she doing whatever system of schooling that she's in? Is she just running with year 12?
So she's in grade 12 at an international school that runs with an American curriculum. Uh-huh. And some of her courses are AP, advanced placement. So they've already been given information on how to start school starting on Monday, distance.
Is it all looking clear at this stage? I guess she's okay to fly back in. It would be more the problem of you flying out, right?
Correct. We could still leave. A lot of flights are being cancelled. Air Canada isn't really flying, but she's on China Eastern, which is still flying daily, and we're watching the flights, making sure that they're still coming in on time, which they are. One of the issues that we're concerned about is that we're actually on lockdown now in our apartment complex. Mm. Only one person can leave every second day, and we have a slip that has to get signed to make sure that we're not sneaking out, I guess.
Oh, my gosh.
So I want to make sure that, yeah, I want to make sure that our driver can get to her and pick her up and bring her back safely to our apartment.
Yes. So when you say that someone is basically signing you in and out of your apartment, how does that work? What is the administration? Is it the government that's checking on that? Is it just that each apartment complex has been set someone to do that? How does that actually work?
I'm not quite sure, but basically what they're trying to do is I'm receiving information daily from the Ningbo government that's telling us what to do. And I'm sure that each community is in charge of making that happen. I live in quite a large complex, thousands of people in here. And so there's two gates for entry and exit, and there are two guards at each gate, and they are checking and signing. So let's see if that actually works. It's just a slip of paper with a stamp on it. So, you know, they're hoping, I think, that people are just complying.
And so what does it look like when you do go out? Explain that to me. Like, what looks different and how is it different? And what are you doing when you're going out? Is it just a mad dash for the shops for food, or what is it?
So yesterday was the first day of implementation, and my husband went out. I had been out the previous day, and the streets were quite empty. I had gone to teach a childbirth class. I teach childbirth, and I'm a doula, so I have a client due next month. So I managed to get out and teach them, but the streets were completely empty.
Wow.
And then my husband went out yesterday and went to the local market, and he said it was also quite dead.
Gosh. And so I guess every part of your life ceases then, whether that's a Pilates class or a coffee with a girlfriend or, you know, language lessons or anything.
Absolutely. But, you know, on Monday next week, I'm starting back with my classes with my Chinese teacher. She's going to call me and we're going to have a chat and I'm going to do my homework. So things like that we can do. But yeah, we're basically confined to our apartment and then being able to take walks so far outside our within the complex. I have three dogs here with me right now and they need to get out.
I bet. And then, Susan, so you're a doula. So how does that work when it comes to, I guess, delivering babies, if that comes up in the next little while, but also your clients? Do you, I imagine you have some expat clients there with their choices of heading to hospital to give birth, or if you're allowed to stay home, or if they actually hop on a plane and go somewhere else? What does that look like?
So I had two clients, one who's due beginning of March and another one who's due in May. My May client was in her home country when all of it happened, so she has decided to just stay put with her young son and family, and her husband's just going to come here for work when he's back able to. So I think that's a great decision for her. She's already there and has the care that she needs. My other client, she's already missed her window to travel. She's no longer able to fly out because of her the week she is in pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So as it stands now, she'll be going to a private hospital that only deals with births. So there's no sick people there.
Yes.
Everything is business as usual for them. And as long as I stay, you know, following this quarantine as well, we're hoping that they'll also allow me to join them. Usually I go to a client's home, first of all, to help them in early labor. So if the ban of my leaving my Shaoxu is lifted, then I'll do that. If not, I'll just try to meet them at the hospital when it happens.
And what's your personal feeling at the moment? Susan, are you thinking storm in a teacup, or are you thinking, oh, this is starting to get a bit alarming?
Well, I woke up this morning a little bit panicky, feeling like now I'm being told to stay in. But, you know, for the most part, I see what the government information is, and I'm trusting that, you know, they're trying to just make sure that this gets done as soon as possible. There's a little bit of overkill for sure. And I'm just right now going to trust because I'm here. And so I'm going to follow the protocol and hope that that's what's going to work. All of the cases in Ningbo have been people from Wuhan or Hubei province or people who have been in contact with them. And they're really aware of who those people are and they're doing a very good job at tracking that.
So if you had a crystal ball, what's your feeling? And I guess what's the feeling of the locals around you?
So what the messages I've been getting this morning from friends is that numbers are going to go down. We're going to trust that this is all going to be pretty much over in about 2 weeks. That because we're being separated from everyone, we're staying in, we're being careful, that there is no method of transmission. So if there's nowhere for the virus to go, we should all be fine in a few weeks. Even today, the numbers, new numbers for Ningbo were non-existent. There's no new cases today. And the people who are being treated, now people are starting to be discharged because they're healthy.
Susan, we chatted yesterday. You were very calm. I commented on how calm you were. We talked about the fact that your daughter was going to come back to school in China, although she would still be doing it via distance until the school opened. But what, tell me, what happened yesterday and what changed after we spoke?
So after we spoke, I was still fine with the decision we had made. But I was asked by the school to report my daughter's flight status. And once I sent those flights in, I received a message back saying that the official word is that my daughter should just stay in Canada. It is much safer that way. I said, well, does that mean that we should leave? And she said, no, you're safe in your complex. Your daughter's safe in Canada. The travel in between is what is concerning. They don't know how things will change in terms of her even coming from the airport to our apartment. And it seems like there's new messages, new information happening constantly as the situation changes.
Wow.
They also said that it looks like the schools are going to be starting back March 3rd. All of that information from other international schools is starting to come in. So I'm sure we will follow suit.
So the general information is that international schools are planning at this point to return with children in classrooms from March 3rd. And does that mean that they would not suggest that your daughter get on a plane until then? Or what's the information on that right at the moment?
So again, there's just not a very good amount of information, and it seems to be a lot of speculation and tentative. But the idea, I think, still is that students would have to return and be in a 14-day quarantine before school does come back in person. So we really don't have true information at this point about school. The other issues that are coming out are misunderstandings over what the rules are for foreigners in town. So we had a couple of incidents yesterday where one woman was told she couldn't leave her apartment at all, and another who was not allowed into his complex as he was returning from South Africa. In both those cases, the local communities were incorrect in how they were dealing with the situation, and the police bureau helped these foreigners out. And they're both fine now.
So the gentleman from South Africa, I gather, returns at the airport, gets a ride, however, back to his apartment and is then told, no, you can't come in?
That's correct. And he was in shorts and a T-shirt because he had just come from a nice warm country.
And so is it a matter then that he has to go to the police station and say, can you please help me get into my apartment? Is that how that went down?
No. The management called the police because they were upset with this foreigner who wanted into his apartment. And so when the police arrived, they said, no, he's allowed into his apartment. Right. So it's a lot about big rules coming down the line and not everyone understanding the meaning.
Yes. So how are you feeling today? Because I imagine for you there would be an enormous amount of stress about your daughter being in one place and you being in another.
Yes. Last night the stress was all around just actually making that decision, and I'm feeling better that we have made it. She's with family. where she is in Ontario. So I'm not concerned in any way about her not being taken care of. She's in good hands.
Yes.
But yeah, it is weird to be separated in this way. There is still a possibility that I would leave as well. But as of today, I'm fine where I am. She's fine where she is. And I also mentioned yesterday that I had a doula client that was planning on staying. And things changed so quickly yesterday again with the messages we were receiving that she decided to leave. She was able to get out today.
So when you get these messages, how do they come to you? Like, how do you find out? Where does the information come from?
So it is coming from WeChat groups, but because I'm trying to keep a clear head, I'm looking for the correct sources. I've lived in China for a long time, so I have some people that I can talk to. So I spoke to someone who works with foreigners a lot and has a relationship with the government, and asked her for correct sources from the police bureau. And so now we are in a very close connection, learning about what we should be doing as foreigners, how we can be taken care of, how we can take care of ourselves through this foreign liaison and the police bureau. It's so important with WeChat groups that we don't start to panic and spread misinformation.
Have you and your husband discussed an end point, like how long you carry this on for, or, you know, do you get to March and that school hasn't gone back? Do you hop on a plane? How does all of that look?
Yeah, I would say that giving it a few more weeks, looking at the 17th and see, you know, what numbers are looking like and how people are behaving. If we're still locked down, it can get quite tedious. And so I think that my husband and I would consider my son and I leaving here and heading back to Canada as well for a little while.
Now, how old is your son?
He's 16.
And what's his feeling on it? Like, obviously you and your husband can have a joint message of what you plan to do, but how's he feeling and what does he want to see happen?
He asked us this morning if we were going to get on a plane. And I said, as of today, no, everything's fine. And he said, okay, great. He's quite busy. We've taken on people's pets. We have two extra dogs in the house and a cat in another apartment. He's watering people's plants. He's got a little side hustle going on, so he's pretty good.
Oh, wow. Well, that is a difference. Okay. Well, Susan, I think we might have to do the weekly update with Susan, I think, on Two Fat Expats, because I'm sure that all of our listeners are going to want to know what's happening this week with Susan and where's her daughter.
I'm happy.
Yes. And I guess the one thing I keep thinking about is with your daughter, the fact that she's in year 12, because I also have a child in year 12. And, you know, we worry so much about them missing an afternoon, you know, to go to the dentist and having to catch up. But to think about being in a completely different country and having to do all of it by long distance learning, that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, we are pretty lucky because I actually homeschooled for a few years in the past. And so it's something that both of my kids are used to.
Yes.
And I have a lot of confidence in our school and in our teachers. And there's a lot of patience involved and we'll get through it.
Yes.
Okay, wow. That's a lot of big changes that happened in just a short period, really. So what she was saying about how she was feeling about it when you ask her how she felt about it, she said the difficult part was making the decision, and then now she's made the decision, everyone feels a little bit happier and more settled, which I guess is a good thing. And as you said, checking in with Susan every week might be, for a little while, might be a good way for us and for our listeners to keep across how it is on the ground in China.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, it's a difficult one Nikki, if we look at it from our own personal perspective, right? You and I have talked about this in the fact that we're both separated from our family in some way. You have a husband who's in one country while you're in another, and I have a husband and a child in another country for at least another couple of weeks until I fly back. And you are very conscious of your family being separated at a time. Like, what, you know, that's when all the what ifs come. And I guess I feel like the coronavirus has infected our Facebook group, as in coronavirus fashion, of so many what ifs and should I and is it and whatever, of people just not really understanding where they're at the moment.
Yeah, I think that's true. So, and of course, while we're happy to support people through certain processes, that, you know, we are not the World Health Organization and we cannot answer specific questions in the group, and nor do we want people to take their life advice from 20,000 strangers. You know, that there's actual facts and information and then there's not. But for the people living through and asking the questions, it's very real for them, and they, you know, specific things come up from time to time that are, you know, they're really seeking information on it, not necessarily just advice and opinions. So I think it's valid in that point. But yes, certainly coronavirus is, well, it's something that's really impacting international travel every day now and more. And I think people are facing different situations and they feel that their situation is not like any other that they've read about or that they've got a person that they know that's going through. So they just turn to somewhere where they think that they'll be able to get answers for that.
I think you're right, Nikki. You and I both lived through SARS and the bird flu as expats. I remember when I was in Libya, I think, for SARS and that whole thing where suddenly it was just before the summer and the Canadians were told, sorry, you can't come home. We're not going to let you into Canada. And it just, you know, as an Australian who was happily hopping on a plane to fly home, thinking, gee, that's rough, but you don't really get it, do you? Whereas what I'm interested about is the whole thing of time too, because I don't know about you, but it hasn't crossed my mind, the whole pandemic thing as an expat and what that would look like for us again. You know, I've clearly forgotten so quickly.
Yeah, how it would look. Well, so quickly. I mean, so SARS was 17 years and bird flu was 10 or 12. I'm not sure exactly how long ago that was.
Was bird flu, yeah, no, so SARS was 2003?
Yes. Right? And bird flu was after that. I'm not sure exactly when, but.
So bird flu was 2013.
Okay, so it was 10 years after SARS.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that long ago.
I think because bird flu just wasn't the same impact. Do you know, I think I can't remember being particularly worried about bird flu in Doha, whereas now looking at the coronavirus, I do think and my worry isn't about getting sick or contaminated or whatever. My worry is about what if they cancel flights from one point to the other and I get stuck with one lot of family somewhere and one lot of family somewhere else.
Yeah, and I mean, that is the worry, right? There are also worries like this is going to cause a global recession, there's going to be a huge economic shutdown. I mean, all Cathay Pacific staff have been asked to take 3 weeks unpaid leave between now and June. Pick a day, do it. You know, there are flight crews that have been flying in and out of China that can't fly anywhere else right now. There are all sorts of economic impacts and there's expats sitting around everywhere saying, goodness, what if we lose, what if the jobs go and then what do we do? How do we get somewhere else? But at the end of the day, family is the most important thing, you know, like, so you really want to know that you can, whatever happens, yes, that you can be with your family. And I think that that's something that, and that's, yeah, why people ask the questions, you know, can I do this or can I do that? Because they want to be with their family and not necessarily endanger any of them or anybody else along the way. So, you know, they're just looking for the best and safest way to do that.
Yes. So, Nikki, if you had to fly into China in the next 4 months, do you think you'd be doing it?
I think I wouldn't be. I know that someone in our office had a trip booked to China and just received a full refund last week because they cancelled all the flights in February. So,
right.
If I see on my favorite Johns Hopkins heat map of the coronavirus, if I see a leveling out of the pretty arrow that's only going up, then you know that's something to reconsider. But I mean, there is a conference that I'm meant to be going to in Bangkok in March, and at this point, it looks probably like I won't be going. But mainly at the moment, just because that other countries, if they came, would have to be in quarantine. So if you come from Hong Kong or China or Japan and Singapore, and they're going to put you in quarantine, that you wouldn't go to the conference if you had to spend 14 days in quarantine on the way back or on the way there. So
yes,
that's the other thing about the international travel.
Yeah. That's exactly it. And it's all those people, like you said, who do business in China, one of those being my husband, who now is, you know, on the ground and everything's done over the phone. And you want to make sure that those relationships you have with your Chinese clients are really, really good, because your Chinese clients are also sitting at home and talking to you from their house. So I think that's the important thing that I think people need to really think about too, is just how shocking this must be for people in China right now.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's the isolation that you feel. I mean, if I didn't have any trips planned and I don't want to go anywhere, I feel perfectly fine. But if I was going to go to China or I was going to go to Bangkok and I had these things planned and then someone said, no, you can't do that, that's when you start to feel a little bit caged up and you think, oh, and I can only imagine, based on the things that you know, in Susan's interview where she was talking about people not being able to get into their apartment buildings and things like that. I mean, that's a whole other level. Like, that's not even, and that's what people are dealing with in China on a daily basis, because their information is changing so quickly and things are changing so fast.
And you look at the difference between one day Susan saying, oh, yeah, but it's okay because I've still got patients here who are going to have their babies at maternity hospitals and I'll be doing that. And then the next day it's like, well, actually, no, that person's decided they're going to fly out and go. And then you're thinking, well, then that affects your mental health in that you suddenly don't have a job that you're going to and working at and getting that you know, that feeling from, and you're sitting at home waiting for your big trip out to the supermarket for 3 hours every second day.
Yes. And then you're also sitting there with one child and while another child's in another country. So, I mean, there's all these things that are going on, and like me making a crack about not being able to have a trip sounds really bad now that I've reflected on that. Sorry, people. I'm not that shallow, really. All the time.
Okay, so I guess, Nikki, what we're trying to say, and especially to those posting in the group and saying, you know, should I fly through here to get to there, or should I even go to such and such or whatever, is it safe? The answer is we can't tell you whether it's safe. Only the World Health Organization can tell you it's safe, and only the government of that particular country can tell you if it's safe. So it's best not to ask in the Facebook group if it's safe. It's best to go to a World Health Authority and ask them. But if you want to know things like, I'm going to Singapore and I'm wondering if Raffles is still open and I'll still be able to have a gin sling or a Singapore sling. Yeah. Well, we're the people to ask.
Yes. We've got the down low on that stuff, the important thing.
Yes, we can tell you if the school is open and we can tell you those sort of things, but we can't tell you whether you're going to contract the coronavirus, because we don't know. We don't know what your personal situation is in hand washing and mask wearing and who you're going to be near and what that situation is going to be right at the time.
100%, Kirsty. Excellent.
And Nikki, you were saying too about SARS and how different it was back then without social media.
I just think that it's different. So when you were in SARS, you had to wait for the news. You had to listen to the news. You had to read the news, and you chose more than one news source because, of course, even then we knew that we should read more than one thing. And I think now people are talking about, you know, the news being not necessarily that 100% transparent in China for various reasons, but there are WeChat groups and there's all sorts of things going on. So people are able to share information in a positive way, but then that also, because they're a little bit skeptical about the official news source, they're also sharing information in a negative way. So yeah, it's a minefield out there that you don't want to sort of step in it too much or get too involved, because there are plenty of rabbit holes to go down.
I guess one of the groups in our community, Nikki, that I'm really, or two that I really think about at times like these, one is pregnant women.
Yeah.
Because you are either you've gone too far in your pregnancy to get on a plane and head home, or you're going to be in quarantine when you're there. Maybe home doesn't want you anymore and you're stuck where you are. So a big shout out to the pregnant women that are sitting there thinking, shit, I got my timing wrong on this one. But also to our students, our IB students, because like Susan said, she has a daughter in year 12 and, you know, we're now into February and you know, we're reaching sort of where 3/4 into the school year for most of these kids. And I know with SARS that was one of the big things people talked about, is that maybe the IB people weren't really great at recognising what had happened to a lot of the SARS kids in, you know, having to miss school and homeschool and whatever. So I really, really hope that someone is advocating on their behalf, because I cannot imagine not having that one-on-one teacher time that you might need, particularly when you think about if you're doing subjects like biology and chemistry that, you know, require pracs or, you know, actual experiment time, you know, where you've got to be performing particular acts where those things might just be at school. It's a bit different if you're just learning, you know, adding and subtracting at home with your mother with a big glass of gin.
Can I tell you, there's no learning, adding and subtracting at home. I am in 6 months into a new IB math course and I have no idea what's going on. And they assign lots of YouTube videos and I'm watching late at night when no one else is sitting with me, YouTube videos about how to do math, and not helpful to me. So, yes, I also think math is something where it'd be good to be at school with a teacher.
Yeah, no, sorry, I meant it's different between little kids where you do
it. Oh, right.
Sorry. Yeah. There is no way. I stopped doing math with my children from about grade 7.
It was quite, there was one post that I quite had a little bit of a giggle at, because a few months ago someone had moved to Singapore and come into the group and said, what is with all the bidets and the hoses and the how do I operate these things and why would I want to, and this all seems really weird. And then she got a lot of supportive comments about how people have adapted and how they enjoy it and how it's great and how all these kind of good for the environment, et cetera, et cetera. She popped into the group this week and said, thank God, people, for this group and the supportive comments about what she calls the bum gun, because she says that now that there's a toilet paper shortage in Singapore, she feels very confident that she's going to be fine. Yeah. I was going to say, I did note that someone else shared that they have like social media personalities in Singapore now doing almost what amounts to PSAs on behalf of supermarket chains, saying, look, here's our big stockpile. Come back to the supermarket because we'll be restocking. It's not that we don't have any toilet paper, it's just that we haven't got that on the shelves right now. So they're sort of trying to reassure people that keep coming back, don't not come, because and they're doing it through the power of social media.
Okay, so Nikki, I feel that probably if people were looking for lots of answers on the coronavirus, they may not have got them from us today. But all we can do is tell you what it's like in our world, which is the expat world, and that from what we've seen, you know, it's just such a personal thing. And what are your pieces of advice as an expat of 20 years for people that are sitting at home worried about the coronavirus?
Well, I think, you know, everyone's got to be basing their opinion on their current situation. Like, there is no point me worrying about the coronavirus right now. All my family happen to be in the same country this week. There have been no recorded cases in Denmark, so there's going to be no stopping traveling between those two countries at the moment. There's no supermarket shortages. As you can see, I've even got myself a little mask just for fun here. And so I think for me and for our family, it's okay. Will I go to the conference in Bangkok? Probably not. I'd love to go. I'd love to think I can go, but I just, every day I wake up, I think it's more unrealistic. But I totally empathize with those sitting in countries and situations where, you know, and I have friends in Hong Kong and Singapore who were there during SARS, and they think it's not funny, but they feel they're acting a little bit like old hands at it. So they are, you know, don't get me wrong. I've seen an apartment in Hong Kong pretty much full of UHT milk, long life milk, sitting under chairs and popped in everywhere. But I also think that they are the people to talk to if you're a brand new expat in those locations and you say, how is this going to work? You know, this is the, because if you've never been through it before, you don't know what to expect and you don't know how it's going to work out. And you don't know, you know, at the end of the day, how it's going to be. Now you could look at those old hands and say, yes, but SARS wasn't corona and, you know, bird flu wasn't corona. And that's absolutely true, but it does give you a little bit of guidance and just a little bit of a, oh, well, if they've done it before, or, you know, just because change is what creates panic, and changing a situation, particularly on a day-to-day basis that you have no, change that you have no control of, also makes you more anxious. And in the world where anxiety is built up by, you can find anything on social media or on the news to make you anxious and then go down that rabbit hole. You know, I just caution people against that, but you can't stop it happening, unfortunately.
That is brilliant advice. I totally agree with you. If you are a particularly anxious person, get off social media. Give yourself a time limit of, you know, give yourself a time limit and make yourself go, okay, which are the groups that are freaking me out and which are the groups that seem rational and calm? Or maybe I stay away from that for just a little while and I just read, you know, I pick the stories I want to do and miss the headlines because it will send you nutty. The only thing I'd say to on top of that, because your advice is phenomenal, Nikki, is me being in Doha, I feel the same way, that there are no cases so far that have been reported in Qatar. And I think all up in Australia, we have 14 cases. I think it was 12 last week and we're up to 14 this week. So it's not like a rapid, you know, increase here in Australia. But I know that I'll probably be a little bit more cautious when I'm flying and when I'm at the airport. I think, you know, I'm not someone that's taken my wipes and wiped down trays or, you know, done things like that in the past, but maybe I will be a little bit more this time and just a bit conscious about where keeping, I mean, you can't keep your distance from anyone on the plane. You're a sitting duck, basically. But when I'm in the airport, I maybe might try and stay a meter or so away from everyone because that does make a massive difference. So, but I'm the same as you. I think, you know, we just have to stay calm and hope that all the right things are being done and just keep a watchful eye on what the travel advice is from any of the countries that you're going to. But I know if things ramped up and I thought that there was any chance of Qatar Airways stopping flights to Australia, I would be getting my child to Australia or vice versa, however we're going to play it, you know, to have us in one spot, because I couldn't think of anything worse than being separated. But yeah, but I think your advice is rock solid. That's excellent.
Yeah, so shout out to all those families that are separated and don't know how that's going to work. So we're really thinking of you guys as well, because that is a tough, tough thing.
Okay, Nikki Moffat, three favourite things. Give me one.
Well, I'm so glad that we've had this opportunity, because yesterday I went to the movies by myself on a Friday a Sunday afternoon. And I live a 5-minute walk from a movie theater that shows movies in English, but not very often. So I don't go very often, but it was just a rainy Sunday afternoon. I asked my 13-year-old if she wanted to come with me. She said, no. I said, you're really missing out. And I went and I saw Little Women by myself, which was a good idea in the end, because I sobbed all the way through it. Because
I'm so, well, yeah. I'm not pleased with the news of you sobbing all the way through it, but It sounds like you really liked it. And I love this idea because I had heard it was meh, you know, but you loved it.
I love Little Women, the book. I love all the Louisa May Alcott books.
Me too.
And I always love to see Jane Austen and all those movies. Like whatever, you know, there's a new version of Emma, I'll go and watch it. There's actually also a new version of Emma coming out. So I always will go and see it, but I'm always prepared to be disappointed because when you love a book and you love past movies so much, but this, I just thought, how can they do it? And she did it a little bit differently. And I just honestly really loved it. And I was so pleased that I went.
What did you love about it?
Well, for one, it felt like, so in the past, because it's set during the end of the Civil War. So, you know, in the past, I've always felt that this sounds really basic, but it just made such a difference at the beginning. I was thinking, why am I enjoying watching this? And the costumes, and just they were just more colourful. And I think in the past they've all sort of been just very drab, and then we're all just drab. And because they're meant to be a bit of a poor family, and you know, it's the end of the war and all that kind of stuff. But I think that what it said was they didn't make them look like they were wealthy, but they just had colour, like colourful things, like mismatch and whatever. And so just the costume design and whatever, I'm not a big fan necessarily of any of the actresses that were in it. Like I don't, you know, rave about, you know, the lovely Irish girl whose name I can't pronounce correctly, so I'm not going to try. And Hermione Granger was there, you know, and so but Laura Dern as Mommy. And I really loved it. And then she made the director and that she wrote it for the screen and then directed it. And she made a little twist in the story at the end. So the end is always a little bit grim, I think. You sort of never feel that you get a good ending because all those books end sort of on the page that the last thing happens, you know, like the girl gets the boy or whatever. And so it doesn't feel satisfying. Yes. You know, you want to know a little bit more. And there is a second book in the series called Joe's Boys and about when she starts the school and, you know, is married and has her own children. And what they've done is they've taken a little bit of license and sort of gone into that sort of maybe for 60 to 75 seconds, but just sort of made an ending sequence so you can see sort of what happens next, which you never do. You know, it always usually ends up in the umbrella in the rain and yes, I'll marry you and whatever. I really enjoyed it. Now, I posted about it on my Facebook page and I put a couple of articles up because I was like, if you haven't seen it, you should definitely see it. They've made the role of Amy a lot bigger in the film than it necessarily was in the book. And I read an article saying someone who'd never read the book or seen any movies and how they love the character of Amy. And I spent the whole movie thinking, I don't like her still, but I like what she's doing in the film. So I was there. So I've come into the film with my preconception that I don't like Amy. But then I was thinking, no, I don't like her, but I do see that she has an expanded role here and I like how she's doing it. So I don't know. There are just lots and lots of things. And the way that she does it, obviously, if you've ever read or seen Little Women, I mean, it's a very old book and there's been a lot of versions of it. So there is a main character that does die.
Yes.
But the way she's done it is she's dying pretty much the whole way through because there's backwards and forwards in time. And so we're always at a scene where she might be dying within 5 minutes. So that was sort of part of the ongoing silent sobbing that I was doing because that's always the part that gets me in the book and the other movie. So just big fan, strong recommend, totally, totally loved it. And love going to the movies by myself.
Yes. Do you know, I don't know if I've ever been to the movies by myself. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I don't
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Well, I won't do it this week, but I'm going to do it next week. I'm going to go to the movies by myself.
Definitely going to do it next
week. I definitely am going to do it next week.
Well, someone had mentioned at work that it was on, and I thought, oh, I wonder when it is on. And so I just happened to Google it, and it said, and it was 3 o'clock and it said it's on at 5 o'clock and at the theater around the corner. I was like, okay, I'm in. And I messaged a friend. I said, do you want to come? She said, oh, no, we've got a concert tonight or something. I said, fine, go by myself. And I did. And I totally loved it. It was fabulous.
Look, I'm going to do a blast from the past with mine. I picked an older movie that I saw on, I think I saw it on Netflix, and that was Britney Runs a Marathon, which I had avoided because I'm not a fan, and before people will shoot me and say, but Amy Schumer's not in it, the woman who is in it, Gillian Bell, really reminds me of Amy Schumer. And I thought it was going to be like one of those movies. And, it just didn't appeal. I thought it was going to be, I was fat and unhappy, and then I ran a marathon and got skinny and now I'm happy. And that didn't appeal to me. And it's not like that at all. It's basically a woman who is kind of a really hard-putting person who goes to the doctor to try and con him into giving her some drugs. And basically he calls her bluff. He can see that she's in a bit of strife. And he kind of motivates her to lose some weight, and she ends up, you know, training for the marathon, the New York City Marathon, which of course you, Nikki Moffat, have done over a period of time.
Well, just the one day took me.
No, but I thought the training itself went for a couple of years, right? Because you were going to do it for a year, then cancelled, and then to train and go, which is highly impressive.
Yes. Well, I'm a one mountain, one marathon girl. I've now retired from marathon running, but to do the New York Marathon, if anyone ever wants to do a marathon in their life, I would, even though it's the only one I've ever done, I would 1,000% support any kind of training or motivation towards doing the New York Marathon, because it is the most amazing experience. And I would definitely always have it in my top 10 life experiences, I imagine, because it, amazing. You can't even begin to tell, like, to have so many people turn out on the side of the road just to watch the stragglers, because really, like, it was 5 hours and a bit for me. It's not like I was right up there with the winners, who also start hours before you, so they finish before you even start. So just the streets of New York are one big party all day, and everyone wears their names on their shirts, which I thought was a little bit naff. But I ended up sort of writing my name at the last minute on my shirt, and I couldn't be happier. You go, Nikki, you got this. Go, girl. You can go, Nikki. And like, I was like, maybe I wasn't the only Nikki running past. I don't know. But honestly, and the people scream for everybody going past, and there's bands and there's buskers. And there's everything. And it just is amazing. Amazing experience.
I cannot imagine running for an hour nonstop, let alone five. Like, I am so impressed with that feat. I think it's incredible.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine it either anymore. So there you go.
And did you run side by side with someone, or were you on your own some of the time? How does it work?
I was on my own. So you have to predict before you start how long you'll take to run it. And then they put you in a group of runners that have predicted that they would run about the same time. So that's how you start. So you don't start with all these people who are trying to, like, run through and do it in 2 hours, because there'd be no point in that. So you start a little bit, you know, they stagger everybody, so you're starting at about the same. But I can't run with anybody. I can't even train with anybody, because I get very put off by someone running beside me, and I get all caught up in how they're running. So I have to, always drop back. So even if I run with people, I'm always sort of 5 meters behind, because I'd like to be in my own lane sort of thing, which is a bit weird. But
that's making a lot of sense to me, Nikki.
I'm a joiner. I'm a joiner, but that's my own thing. But there was one couple that were doing it for their 25th wedding anniversary or something, and they were running, and they did this thing where you walk for 60 seconds and run for 60 seconds, and they did my head in. I know I had to change the other side of the track because I would run past them when they were doing their walk, their fast walk, and I would just be shuffling a little bit faster than their fast walk. So I'd get past them. And then 60 seconds later, they'd run past me because their run was faster than my run. So we would do this backwards and forwards for about an hour. And I was like, okay, no, these people, I have to move away from them because they were getting in my head.
Yes.
Like, it was getting in my head. So I moved to the other side of the course. But I guess we finished about the same time. They may have finished earlier than me because the last 2 miles up the hill into Central Park, the imaginary secret hill that you can only see if you've been running for the last 5 hours, but it is really a very, very slow slope. It really got me in the end. I wasn't quite fit enough to finish all the way, but I did run over shuffled over the finish line a little bit faster. But yeah, no, amazing, amazing. And I have never watched that movie for kind of those reasons, but now you're suggesting it's a good watch. Maybe I will.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. It's a good watch for women to think about. It's a good story about health and fitness and self-worth, I think, more so than weight loss, but also about how you can have certain friendships that are quite toxic and that there are some people that really like you to be the fat friend. And so it kind of went down that road as well. I thought it was a good chick flick. It was a good, okay, I've got Netflix, I'm on my own, I might pour myself a glass of wine and watch this movie and have a bit of a giggle, but also go, yeah, I know those people. It was good. I liked it. Okay, Nikki, what else have you got?
Well, one of my favourite things this week is I booked a villa in Crete for the first week of the school holidays.
Nice.
Which happens to also be my 50th birthday week. So, I've just said that out loud. Oh, I feel horrified.
So when are you going, Nikki? When are you coming to join you?
Well, I would really love that. It's so hard when you're an expat, as you know, to celebrate big birthdays because you want so many people to be involved and usually they can't. And, I mean, a couple of years ago we went to one of our friends' roving 50th. So I think he had 50th in 5 cities globally. Was a great idea. I don't think I'm going to be able to manage that this year, but my sister-in-law is 2 weeks younger than me, as she constantly reminds me. And she and her family will be coming to Europe for the summer over their winter break. And my mother-in-law is also coming. And it's the first time she's come to Europe to visit us. So we're all going to spend a week together in Crete. And so that was my responsibility to book the villa. And as you can tell, it's February and we're going at the end of June, which is quite advanced planning for me. But my sister-in-law has been on to me about it since October. So every week she's been reminding me. And so I've done it. So that was one of my favourite things this week, to press the button and book the villa.
Now, you know what would be nice is to do a coronavirus prediction for then. Do you think by June everybody will be travelling back to their normal travel state?
I don't think so. And so I was quite surprised that she has still been, like, I don't think she has thought that far ahead. Like, will I want to fly from Australia through Singapore? I think they're coming through Singapore to Europe in June. I'm not 100% sure, but
I don't think Australians have sort of thought about that, just by the way that I have had, you know, a few Australian friends say to me, "Oh, how's the coronavirus looking for you guys in Qatar?" And I've thought, well, why would it look any different in Qatar than it does in Adelaide? Like, really, there's no reason.
There's a case in Adelaide and there's no cases in Qatar.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't think people, but obviously, you know, like you're talking about Cathay Pacific have asked people to take annual leave, and that this would be exactly one of the reasons, because people would not be booking their flights thinking, oh, I'm just going to hold off and see, because I don't know if I want to get on an airplane into Asia at that time. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Anyway, that was one of my favourite things this week.
Yes.
And I'll be going to Crete anyway, as long as there's still travel in Europe.
Now, my ultimate favourite thing on the television right now, and this is for everyone throughout the world, Australian Survivor All-Stars.
Oh, God.
And it is the best. I'm going to say it. It is the best series of Survivor that I have seen. We're talking people doing things that you've never thought of before. We've got, oh, that's so clever. Or, oh, that's just made the whole thing. And I have a child who's not a Survivor fan who has suddenly become a Survivor fan because even she got sucked into it and had to say, does this usually happen? So I'm not going to give the game away, but it is an all-star game, which means that they bring back previous people who have been in it. And the difference in this all-star one is there is so much revenge. Like there is so much of people that got done in by other people in different series who all they want to do is make sure that person goes before them this time. So it is brilliant. So even if you're an American Survivor fan or, you know, a Brit Survivor fan, I think you would enjoy this. It's on Channel 10 in Australia, so you can watch it on 10 Play, and it's good. It's really good.
Okay, so how many weeks in are we? How many people have already left the island?
Oh, it's only 1 week in and three. So they kicked off with three episodes, three nights in a row. And I think it's because they safely knew. Like they've gone hard on this one. We're talking they're on all the bus stops, they're on the side of the buses. It's really good production value in Australia. I don't know whether the team is just more economic or whether they've been given a bigger budget, but it is one of those things, you know, usually Australia is kind of the bridesmaid in when they redo a series, right?
Yes.
It's never quite as good. But this one, Nikki, I have heard a lot of people say, do you know what? This is bordering on, well, you can't tell the difference for a start in the production value. And I think Jonathan LaPaglia as the host does an incredible job.
And where is this one based? Where are they?
Oh, it's always a good Survivor when you don't know where they are because you've totally forgotten. I think they're in Fiji, but I could be wrong. But it is good.
And this far out, who's your prediction? Top three? Have you got a top three people?
I've already got someone who I think deserves to win it after just what they did last night. Like it's that good. Yeah.
All right.
Well, just because they've done something I've never seen done before and they have just played it so well.
I know. You're a big fan. Okay, there's three things between us and I think we're going to have to wrap it up because I do need to go to work.
Absolutely.
So great chat. Hopefully next week we'll have an update from Susan, who can tell us how she's going.
We will have an update from Susan and we'll also have an update from a paediatrician who is working in China at the moment and she has her entire family there. And so she's agreed to an interview this week. So we'll talk to a medical professional about what their world looks like and what they're doing with their family.
Oh, I'm very excited to look forward to that. Okay.
Okay.
Speak to you next week, Kirstie. Bye-bye.
Bye now.